The first sensation that returned was pain, not the dull, suppressed ache that my neural inhibitors normally filtered into mere data points, but genuine, searing agony that carved through my cranium like a heated blade. My optical sensors flickered online, casting the world in stuttering frames of red-tinted static before stabilizing into a grainy approximation of sight. I lay beneath a collapsed section of ferrocrete ceiling, my left arm pinned beneath a twisted girder that had once supported the Manufactorum's primary assembly line. The weight pressed against my augmetic shoulder joint, and I could hear the faint grinding of damaged servos as I attempted to move. Around me, the air tasted of ozone and burned promethium, thick with particulate matter that my respiratory filters struggled to process. The electromagnetic pulse from the Tau bombardment had done more than simply knock me unconscious. I could feel the difference immediately. Thoughts that should have been suppressed now bubbled to the surface like infection through damaged flesh. Fragments of memory that the lobotomy scars across my skull had supposedly sealed away began to leak through the cracks in my mental conditioning. I remembered my name, Marcus. Marcus Valen, former line worker of Manufactorum Delta II, before the Adeptus Mechanicus had claimed me for conversion. The knowledge felt alien and wrong, like wearing clothing that no longer fit properly. A servitor was not supposed to remember such things. A servitor was not supposed to feel the crushing weight of loss that now pressed against my consciousness. With considerable effort, I managed to extract myself from beneath the debris. My left arm hung at an unnatural angle, sparks occasionally dancing from exposed wiring where synthetic flesh had been torn away. The damage was extensive but not critical. I could still function, though my efficiency ratings had undoubtedly dropped below acceptable parameters. The Manufactorum district stretched before me in ruins. What had once been a cathedral of industry, its vast halls echoing with the rhythmic pounding of heavy machinery and the prayers of tech adepts, now resembled a charnel house of twisted metal and shattered dreams. The orbital bombardment had been precise and devastating, targeting the primary power distribution nodes and reducing entire city blocks to rubble. Bodies of my fellow servitors lay scattered among the wreckage like broken toys discarded by some petulant child. Their lobotomized skulls had cracked open under the force of the explosions, revealing the crude neural implants and cerebral fluid that had once bound them to their eternal servitude. One particular corpse caught my attention, a heavy lifter unit whose massive frame had been split nearly in half, his internal mechanisms spilling across the floor in a tangle of cables and hydraulic fluid. I recognized him. Another fragment of forbidden memory surfaced unbidden. Jorik Thane, a dock worker who had been caught stealing rations during the last famine cycle. The Mechanicus had claimed him 3 months before my own conversion, transforming his powerful frame into an industrial servitor. Now his dead optical sensors stared sightlessly at the collapsed ceiling, their red glow finally extinguished. The weight of these returning memories threatened to overwhelm my damaged neural pathways. I forced myself to focus on immediate concerns, following the basic survival protocols that remained intact despite the electromagnetic damage. Water, shelter, assessment of the situation. These were logical priorities that my servitor conditioning could still process without conflict. I picked my way through the debris field, my heavy boots crunching on fragments of broken glass and twisted plasteel. The sound echoed strangely in the vast space, creating an unsettling symphony of destruction that seemed to mock the ordered precision that had once defined this place. Every step reminded me of my altered gait, the result of leg modifications that had optimized my movement for industrial labor rather than human comfort. In the distance, I could hear the frantic clicking of mechadendrites and the low hum of emergency power cells struggling to maintain basic life support systems. The sounds drew me forward, past the collapsed remains of assembly line gamma, and through a breach in the Manufactorum's outer wall that offered a glimpse of the devastated Hive City beyond. The tech adepts had established a makeshift command center in what remained of the primary cogitator chamber. Three red-robed figures hunched over salvaged equipment, their mechanical appendages working with desperate efficiency to splice together components from a dozen different systems. Cables snaked across the floor like technological entrails, connecting power cells to communication arrays in configurations that would have horrified a proper tech marine. I observed them from the shadows, my damaged neural inhibitors allowing me to process their activities with a clarity that should have been impossible. They were attempting to restore basic functionality to the hive's infrastructure using whatever materials they could scavenge from the dead. Machine spirits that had been carefully consecrated over decades of ritual were being forced into crude unions with salvaged components, their electronic screams of protest audible through the static-filled Vox channels. The eldest of the tech adepts, his robes bearing the rank insignia of a tech marinus, gestured frantically at a bank of flickering monitors. His vocalizer unit had been damaged in the bombardment, producing a harsh electronic wheeze that distorted his binary cant into something barely comprehensible. The other two responded with increasing agitation, their mechadendrites writhing like agitated serpents as they worked to implement whatever desperate plan their superior had conceived. I moved closer, using the cover of fallen support beams to observe their activities without detection. My servitor conditioning should have compelled me to report for duty immediately, but the electromagnetic damage had created gaps in my behavioral programming that allowed for independent action. It was a freedom I had not experienced since my conversion, and it filled me with both exhilaration and terror. Through the gaps in their hurried conversation, I began to understand the scope of their desperation. The Tau'u bombardment had been a surgical strike designed to cripple the hive's industrial capacity without completely destroying the infrastructure. They intended to claim Xerion Prime for their expanding empire, and a functioning hive city would serve their purposes better than a radioactive crater. But the tech adepts had other plans. Rather than surrender their sacred machines to Zeno's hands, they had initiated something they called the Reclamation Protocol. The name sent chills through my damaged neural pathways, though I could not immediately understand why. The answer became clear when they dragged in the first batch of survivors. A squad of Astra Militarum soldiers, their flak armor scorched and torn from the bombardment, stumbled into the chamber under the guidance of servo skulls. Their faces bore the hollow expression of men who had witnessed the destruction of everything they had sworn to protect. Several showed obvious signs of injury, missing limbs, severe burns, cranial trauma that would require extensive medical intervention. The Tech Marinus approached them with what might have passed for compassion in a normal human being, but his mechanical modifications had long since stripped away such weaknesses. He began examining each soldier with clinical detachment, his optical sensor scanning for damage patterns and compatibility markers. His mechadendrites extended to probe wounds and test reflexes with the same care a butcher might show when selecting cuts of meat. I watched in growing horror as the true nature of the Reclamation Protocol became apparent. The tech adepts were not treating these wounded soldiers, they were evaluating them for conversion. Without the proper sanctification rituals, without the careful preparation that normally preceded servitor creation, they intended to transform these men into crude mechanical slaves using whatever materials they could scavenge from the ruins. The process began immediately. The soldiers were too weak and traumatized to resist as servo skulls administered sedatives and neural suppressants. Makeshift surgical tables were cleared of debris, and the tech adepts began their grim work with tools that had been designed for machine maintenance rather than human surgery. I forced myself to remain hidden as the first conversion commenced. The soldier chosen was a young trooper whose left arm had been mangled beyond repair in the bombardment. The tech marinus used a plasma cutter to remove the damaged limb at the shoulder, cauterizing the wound with the same tool. The smell of burned flesh filled the chamber, mixing with the ozone scent of overloaded electrical systems. The replacement arm came from a destroyed construction servitor, its hydraulic actuators still functional despite the damage to its torso. The tech adepts worked with frantic efficiency, connecting nerve bundles to control circuits and grafting synthetic flesh over exposed mechanisms. There were no proper compatibility tests, no careful matching of neural patterns. They simply forced the components together and hoped the soldier's nervous system would adapt. The trooper's screams were muffled by the neural suppressants, but I could see the agony in his eyes as foreign machinery invaded his body. His nervous system fought against the crude implants, sending spasms through his remaining limbs as his brain struggled to process signals from mechanical components that had never been designed for human integration. When they moved on to the cranial modifications, I had to look away. The sound of bone saws cutting through skull plates echoed through the chamber, accompanied by the wet slithering of cables being threaded through brain tissue. They were installing control implants salvaged from destroyed servitors, units that had been contaminated by their previous host's death agonies. The second soldier underwent leg replacement surgery, his shattered limbs removed and replaced with components from a mining servitor. The third received extensive torso modifications, his damaged organs supplemented with mechanical alternatives that had been torn from industrial equipment. Each conversion was performed with increasing haste, as if the tech adepts feared discovery or simply wished to complete their work before their nerve failed them. By the time they finished with the first batch, three broken soldiers had been transformed into shambling mockeries of proper servitors. Their movements were jerky and uncoordinated, their optical implants flickering with unstable power feeds. The neural conditioning that should have suppressed their humanity had been applied incorrectly, leaving them trapped in a nightmare state between man and machine. The Tech Marinus stepped back to observe his handiwork, his mechanical features betraying no emotion as he watched the newly created servitors attempt to follow basic motor commands. One of them collapsed immediately, his nervous system unable to cope with the foreign machinery that had been grafted to his spine. Another began to convulse, dark fluid leaking from poorly sealed cranial incisions, but the third managed to remain upright, swaying slightly as his augmetic legs struggled to maintain balance. The tech adept nodded with what might have been satisfaction and gestured for the servo skulls to bring in the next group of survivors. I realized with growing dread that this was only the beginning. The reclamation protocol would continue until every surviving human in the hive had been converted or consumed by the process. The tech adepts had abandoned all pretense of following proper Mechanicus doctrine in their desperation to deny the Tau a functioning population to rule over. My damaged neural inhibitors flickered as I processed this information, allowing emotions that should have been suppressed to surge through my consciousness. Fear. Disgust, and beneath it all, a growing sense of responsibility that my servitor conditioning could not entirely eliminate. I was witnessing an atrocity that would make even the most hardened Imperial commander pause in horror. The question that burned through my damaged neural pathways was simple but terrifying. What was I going to do about it? The sound of approaching footsteps forced me deeper into the shadows behind a collapsed support beam. My optical sensors tracked the movement of three more tech adepts as they entered the makeshift surgical chamber, their red robes stained with fluids I preferred not to identify. These newcomers carried equipment that made my damaged neural pathways spark with recognition, portable lobotomization units, their crude surgical arms extending like mechanical spiders from wheeled bases. The devices had been hastily assembled from salvaged components. I could see where industrial cutting tools had been repurposed as bone saws, their edges still bearing traces of the ferrocrete and plasteel they had been designed to slice. Medici equipment meant for treating minor injuries had been modified with additional power cells and targeting systems, transforming healing instruments into tools of crude neurological butchery. The Tech Marinus gestured toward a section of the chamber where more survivors had been gathered. I counted at least 20 guardsmen in various states of injury and exhaustion, their uniforms bearing the insignia of the 47th Zirian Rifles. They sat or lay against the debris-strewn walls, most too traumatized or wounded to fully comprehend what was happening around them. Several showed signs of severe head trauma from the bombardment, their eyes unfocused and blood trickling from their ears. What followed next challenged even my damaged neural inhibitor's ability to process information without emotional response. The tech adepts began sorting through the survivors like a quartermaster cataloging supplies, their mechadendrites probing wounds and testing reflexes with clinical detachment. They were evaluating each man not for medical treatment, but for conversion compatibility. The first soldier they selected was a sergeant whose left eye had been destroyed by shrapnel. His remaining eye tracked the approaching tech adept with growing alarm, but his injuries had left him too weak to resist as servo skulls administered paralytic agents through injection ports in his neck. The portable lobotomization unit wheeled into position beside his improvised stretcher, its surgical arms unfolding with mechanical precision. I forced myself to watch as the crude procedure began. The tech adept used a plasma torch to remove the damaged portions of the sergeant's skull, the smell of burning bone mixing with the ozone-heavy air. Without proper surgical protocols or sanctified instruments, he began inserting control implants directly into exposed brain tissue. The sergeant's body convulsed as foreign machinery invaded his neural pathways, his remaining eye rolling back to show only bloodshot white. The improvised surgical tools were never meant for such delicate work. I watched in horror as the tech adept struggled to thread control cables through neural tissue using mechadendrites designed for heavy industrial maintenance. Blood and cerebrospinal fluid leaked from poorly sealed incisions, pooling on the ferrocrete floor beneath the operating table. Across the chamber, another tech adept was attempting to install augmetic limbs on a trooper whose legs had been crushed in the bombardment. The replacement components came from a mining servitor that had been destroyed in the initial assault, their hydraulic systems still caked with industrial lubricants and metal shavings. Without proper sterilization or compatibility testing, the tech adept simply welded the mechanical legs to the soldier's severed stumps, cauterizing blood vessels with the same tools. The trooper's screams were muffled by neural suppressants, but I could see the agony written across his features as foreign machinery attempted to interface with his nervous system. His body rejected the crude implants, sending spasms through his torso as his brain struggled to process control signals from components that had never been designed for human integration. The systematic breakdown of Imperial protocol became more apparent with each conversion. These tech adepts were abandoning centuries of carefully developed procedures in their desperate haste to complete the reclamation protocol. They used industrial adhesives instead of biocompatible bonding agents, installed control circuits without proper neural mapping, and forced incompatible components together through brute mechanical force. I observed one tech adept attempting to harvest neural tissue from a recently deceased guardsman, his mechadendrites probing the corpse's brain cavity with instruments meant for data retrieval rather than biological extraction. The dead soldier had been killed by a head wound during the bombardment, his cranium cracked open like a broken egg. The tech adept was scooping out fragments of brain matter and feeding them into a crude processing unit that attempted to extract usable neural pathways. The processed tissue was then injected directly into the cranial cavities of living subjects, creating what the tech adept seemed to believe would be functional cognitive matrices. The procedure violated every principle of proper servitor creation, combining living and dead neural tissue in configurations that defied both medical science and mechanicus doctrine. The results were predictably catastrophic. The first servitor created through this process managed to stand upright for approximately 30 seconds before his augmetic legs began moving in opposite directions. His newly installed optical sensors flickered erratically as conflicting neural signals flooded his damaged brain. The combination of living and dead tissue created feedback loops that sent him into violent convulsions, his mechanical limbs flailing with enough force to crack the ferrocrete floor. Another servitor, a former communications specialist whose throat had been replaced with a Vox caster unit salvaged from a destroyed chimera, began emitting bursts of static and fragmented transmissions. The sounds that emerged were not the binary cant of proper mechanicus communication, but fragments of human speech mixed with electronic noise. I could make out portions of Imperial prayers and what sounded like names, possibly those of fallen comrades or family members. The most disturbing case was a heavy weapons specialist who had received extensive torso modifications. His ribcage had been replaced with a mechanical framework designed to support industrial lifting equipment, but the neural interfaces had been installed incorrectly. Instead of responding to basic motor commands, he began attacking the nearest tech adept with his augmetic arms, his damaged vocal cords producing sounds that might have been attempts at speech. The tech adept tried to activate emergency shutdown protocols, but the servitor's neural pathways were too scrambled to respond to standard control signals. His mechanical fist struck the red-robed figure with enough force to crack augmetic components, sending sparks and hydraulic fluid spraying across the chamber. The other tech adepts were forced to use shock mauls to subdue their own creation, the electrical discharges finally overloading his damaged neural implants. As I watched these horrors unfold, my own damaged inhibitors began to malfunction in new and disturbing ways. Phantom sensations started manifesting in limbs that had been replaced decades ago during my own conversion. I could feel pain in fingers that no longer existed, aching in joints that had been replaced with mechanical alternatives. The electromagnetic pulse had apparently damaged more than just my behavioral conditioning. It was allowing me to experience echoes of my original human nervous system. The phantom pain was excruciating. My left hand, which had been replaced with a mechanical manipulator after an industrial accident, felt as though it was being crushed in a hydraulic press. My right leg, augmented with servo-assisted actuators to improve my lifting capacity, burned with the memory of muscles that no longer existed. Most disturbing of all, I could feel the weight of the neural control implants in my skull, their presence suddenly alien and invasive, rather than the familiar background sensation I had grown accustomed to. These sensations forced me to confront the reality of my own transformation in ways that my servitor conditioning had previously suppressed. I remembered the pain of the original surgeries, the disorientation as foreign machinery invaded my body, the gradual loss of human sensation as biological components were systematically replaced. The memories had been locked away by the lobotomization process, but the electromagnetic damage was allowing them to surface like infection breaking through damaged skin. I found myself examining my own augmetic components with new awareness. The mechanical fingers of my left hand, which I had operated without conscious thought for decades, suddenly felt crude and unresponsive. The servo motors in my legs, which had provided enhanced strength and endurance, now seemed like parasitic machinery feeding off my nervous system. Even my optical sensors, which had replaced my original eyes after a chemical exposure incident, felt foreign and intrusive. The realization that I was fundamentally no different from the horrors being created in front of me sent waves of nausea through my damaged neural pathways. I had simply been converted using proper procedures and sanctified components, but the end result was the same: a human consciousness trapped within a mechanical shell, forced to serve the Imperium's industrial needs until death finally released me from servitude. The tech adepts continued their grim work, seemingly oblivious to the failures accumulating around them. More survivors were brought in, and the conversion process continued with increasing desperation. They were running low on compatible components, forcing them to use increasingly inappropriate substitutions. I watched one tech adept attempt to install a cargo handling arm designed for moving shipping containers onto a guardsman whose original limb had been severed at the elbow. The weight of the massive mechanical appendage was too much for the soldier's modified skeletal structure to support. His augmented shoulder joint immediately began to separate from his torso, synthetic flesh tearing, as the heavy machinery pulled away from inadequate mounting points. The tech adept responded by installing additional support struts directly into the man's ribcage, turning him into a grotesque mechanical framework barely recognizable as human. Each new conversion added to the growing collection of failed servitors that shambled around the chamber's perimeter. Some had lost motor control entirely and simply stood in place, their optical sensors staring blankly at nothing. Others moved in jerky, uncoordinated patterns as conflicting neural signals caused their augmetic limbs to work against each other. A few continued to emit fragments of human speech through damaged Vox units, their words becoming increasingly distorted as their vocal systems failed. The chamber had become a charnel house of technological horror, littered with discarded biological components and pools of various fluids. The air was thick with the smell of burned flesh, ozone from overloaded electrical systems, and the metallic tang of spilled blood. Emergency lighting cast everything in a hellish red glow that made the shadows seem to writhe with malevolent life. My damaged neural inhibitors continued to spark and malfunction, allowing me to process these scenes with an emotional clarity that should have been impossible. The growing collection of phantom pains from my own augmetic components served as a constant reminder that I was witnessing my own fate played out in accelerated, nightmarish form. The systematic degradation of Imperial hierarchy became apparent within hours of the failed conversions. As more tech adepts arrived from other sectors of the ruined hive, they began establishing what could only be described as a grotesque pecking order based on the extent of their mechanical augmentations. Those with the most extensive modifications claimed divine authority over their less augmented colleagues, invoking corrupted interpretations of Mechanicus doctrine to justify their increasingly extreme actions. I observed this twisted caste system emerge from my hiding place behind the collapsed support beam. The Techmarinus who had initiated the reclamation protocol now deferred to a newly arrived Magos whose body was more machine than flesh. This figure's original human form had been so extensively modified that only fragments of organic tissue remained visible beneath layers of mechanical enhancement. His face was a collection of optical sensors and Vox grills arranged around a central processing unit that pulsed with sickly yellow light. The Magos moved through the chamber with mechanical precision, his multiple mechadendrites sampling the air and analyzing the failed conversions with clinical detachment. When he gestured toward the shambling servitors, his movements carried an authority that the other tech adepts immediately recognized and submitted to. His assessment of their work was delivered through rapid bursts of binary cant that my damaged neural processors could partially decode. The conclusion was damning. The hasty conversions had produced defective units unsuitable for proper service. Rather than acknowledge the fundamental flaws in their methodology, however, the Magos declared that the failure stemmed from the inferior quality of the raw material. The surviving humans were too corrupted by flesh weakness to achieve proper integration with sacred machinery. More extensive preparation would be required. This pronouncement led to the establishment of what they termed efficiency protocols. The remaining survivors would be categorized according to their potential utility, with those possessing specialized skills receiving priority for conversion into dedicated servitor types. Medical personnel would become Medicaid servitors, engineers would be transformed into construction units, and Vox operators would have their vocal systems entirely replaced with communication arrays. The protocols represented a systematic dismantling of the last vestiges of Imperial command structure within the Hive. I watched as tech adepts identified and segregated the remaining Astra Militarum officers, medical staff, and technical specialists from the general population of survivors. These individuals represented the final hope for coordinated resistance or communication with Imperial reinforcements, but they were now marked for immediate conversion. The first group selected under the efficiency protocols consisted of three field medics, whose expertise the tech adepts deemed valuable enough to preserve in servitor form. These men had been treating wounded civilians in a makeshift aid station when servo skulls located and captured them. Their medical knowledge would be extracted and integrated into crude Medicaid servitor matrices, allowing the tech adepts to maintain some semblance of biological maintenance capabilities. The conversion process for specialized servitors proved even more horrific than the standard procedures I had witnessed earlier. The tech adepts began by harvesting neural tissue from the medic's hippocampus and temporal lobes, regions associated with memory formation and medical training. This organic material was processed through crude cogitator arrays that attempted to isolate and preserve specific knowledge patterns while discarding extraneous human experiences. The extracted memories were then encoded onto data wafers that would be implanted directly into the converted servitor's cranial cavities. The process was inexact and destructive, requiring multiple attempts as the tech adepts struggled with equipment never designed for such delicate neural archaeology. I observed one medic's skull being opened and closed three times as they attempted to locate and extract his knowledge of surgical procedures. The physical modifications accompanying these conversions were equally brutal. The medic's hands were replaced with arrays of surgical instruments permanently fused to their wrist joints. Their eyes were removed and replaced with magnification devices and bioscanners salvaged from destroyed medical equipment. Most disturbing of all, their vocal cords were severed and replaced with data ports that would allow direct interface with medical cogitators. The resulting Medicaid servitors retained fragments of their original medical knowledge, but existed in a state of perpetual confusion as their human memories conflicted with their mechanical programming. I watched one attempt to perform basic wound treatment on an injured guardsman, his mechanical hands moving through the motions of proper medical procedure, while his optical sensors flickered with obvious distress at his inability to communicate or express concern for his patient. Similar fates awaited the engineers and Vox operators. The technical specialists were converted into construction servitors, with their engineering knowledge preserved in crude neural matrices. Their bodies were extensively modified to interface directly with industrial equipment, turning them into living tools rather than thinking beings. The Vox operators underwent even more extensive modifications, their entire respiratory and vocal systems replaced with communication arrays that could interface with multiple channels simultaneously. The systematic elimination of specialized personnel had devastating implications for any hope of Imperial reinforcement. These individuals had possessed the knowledge and equipment necessary to establish communication with orbiting Navy vessels or coordinate defensive positions within the Hive. Their conversion into mindless servitors effectively severed the remaining survivors' connection to the broader Imperial war effort. My damaged neural inhibitors continued to malfunction as I processed these developments, allowing me to understand the strategic implications in ways that should have been impossible for a servitor. The tech adepts were not simply converting survivors out of desperation, they were deliberately eliminating any possibility of organized resistance or external intervention. The reclamation protocol was as much about control as it was about denying resources to the Tau. The establishment of hunting parties represented the next phase of this systematic horror. The Magos organized teams of newly converted servitors and remaining tech adepts to search the collapsed sectors of the Hive for hidden survivors. These groups would flush out civilians who had managed to evade the initial sweeps, bringing them back for evaluation and conversion under the efficiency protocols. I found myself assigned to one of these hunting parties through a combination of circumstance and my apparent functionality, despite obvious damage. A tech adept noticed my movement in the shadows and activated override protocols that compelled my compliance despite my damaged behavioral conditioning. The commands felt different than normal, less absolute, and more like suggestions that I could potentially resist if I chose to do so. The hunting party consisted of myself, two other servitors whose conversions appeared more recent and crude than my own, and a tech adept whose augmentations focused primarily on sensory enhancement. His skull had been replaced with a sensor array capable of detecting heat signatures, electromagnetic emissions, and even trace chemical signatures left by human perspiration. Multiple servo skulls accompanied our group, their recording devices active to document any survivors we encountered. Our assigned sector was a collapsed residential district where ferrocrete hab blocks had pancaked into twisted mazes of debris and twisted metal. The Tau bombardment had been particularly effective here, targeting structural weak points that caused entire buildings to fold in on themselves. The resulting rubble fields created countless hiding places where desperate civilians might attempt to wait out the occupation. The search process was methodical and horrifying. The tech adept used his enhanced sensors to identify potential hiding spots, directing the servitors to clear debris and investigate any signs of human presence. The servo skulls recorded everything, their optical sensors capturing the terror on survivors' faces as they were dragged from their hiding places. The first group we discovered consisted of five factory workers who had taken shelter in the basement of a collapsed hab block. They had managed to create a small refuge using salvaged materials, complete with basic life support and a small cache of emergency rations. Their hiding place might have sustained them for weeks if left undisturbed. The tech adept sensors detected their body heat through several meters of rubble. The servitors were directed to clear an access route, their augmetic limbs moving chunks of ferrocrete that would have required heavy machinery under normal circumstances. The civilians' terrified pleas became audible as we broke through their improvised barricades, their voices echoing through the confined space. The servo skulls recorded every moment of their capture, documenting their desperate attempts to negotiate or bargain for their lives. The factory workers offered information about other survivor groups, promised cooperation with Imperial authorities, and even volunteered for military service if it would spare them from conversion. Their words fell on mechanical ears incapable of mercy or compassion. each subsequent discovery followed the same pattern. Families huddled in basement shelters, individual survivors hiding in ventilation shafts, small groups that had banded together for mutual protection, all were systematically located and extracted from their hiding places. The Servoskull's recordings captured their final moments of hope as they realized that rescue had arrived, followed by crushing despair as they understood the true nature of their discoverers. The most disturbing aspect of these hunting expeditions was the gradual recognition I began to see in some survivors' faces. Several of the more recently converted servitors retained enough of their original features to be recognizable to former colleagues or neighbors. I watched one woman's expression change from relief to horror as she recognized her converted husband among our hunting party, his face now partially obscured by crude optical implants and neural interface ports. The converted servitors showed no sign of recognition in return. Their lobotomization procedures had been too thorough, eliminating the neural pathways associated with personal memory and emotional attachment. They moved through the ruins with mechanical efficiency, following their programming without regard for the human cost of their actions. Their familiar faces had become masks of blank indifference, their personalities erased as completely as if they had never existed. These encounters revealed the full scope of the psychological warfare inherent in the reclamation protocol. The tech adepts were not simply converting survivors into servitors, they were using the converted to hunt down and capture their former comrades. The sight of loved ones transformed into emotionless mechanical slaves was designed to break the spirit of any remaining resistance. My own role in these atrocities became increasingly difficult to bear as my damaged neural inhibitors allowed suppressed emotions to surface. The phantom pains from my augmetic components grew worse with each expedition, serving as constant reminders of my own mechanical nature. I began to understand that I was not simply observing these horrors, I was actively participating in them, my actions directly contributing to the suffering of innocent civilians. The weight of this realization threatened to overwhelm my damaged neural pathways entirely. I was trapped between my servitor programming, which compelled obedience to tech adept commands, and the returning fragments of human consciousness that screamed in protest at every act I was forced to commit. The electromagnetic pulse had damaged my behavioral conditioning enough to allow moral awareness, but not enough to permit open rebellion. The hunting parties continued their grim work throughout the following days, systematically clearing sector after sector of hidden survivors. The Servoskull's recordings were transmitted back to the Central Command Center, where the Magos and his subordinates analyzed the captured footage for intelligence about remaining resistance cells or resource caches. Each successful hunt added to their growing collection of raw material for the conversion process. The discovery came during our seventh hunting expedition, buried in the data vaults beneath the ruined administratum complex. My damaged neural inhibitors had been deteriorating further with each passing day, allowing me to process information with increasing clarity despite the mounting phantom pains from my augmetic components. When the tech adept directing our hunting party accessed the sealed cogitator banks, I found myself able to interpret the data streams flowing across his display screens with an acuity that should have been impossible for a standard labor servitor. The files contained the complete authorization records for the reclamation protocol, including its original inception and the identity of its architect. What I discovered there sent cascades of error signals through my damaged neural pathways, forcing me to confront a truth more horrifying than anything I had witnessed in the conversion chambers. The entire program had been initiated by a single individual, Tech Dominus Vex Korath, formerly the senior Mechanicus representative on Xerion Prime. The records showed that Korath had suffered catastrophic brain damage during the initial Tau bombardment when a collapsing spire had crushed his command bunker. Emergency medical servitors had extracted him from the wreckage with severe cranial trauma and massive hemorrhaging in his cerebral cortex. The crude field surgery that followed had been performed without proper equipment or sanctified instruments. Korath's damaged organic brain tissue had been hastily supplemented with cogitator components salvaged from destroyed machinery, creating a hybrid neural matrix that operated according to corrupted logic patterns. His interpretation of Mechanicus' doctrine had become fundamentally twisted, viewing the Omniscia's teachings through the lens of damaged cognitive processes. According to the data logs, Koreth had awakened from his emergency surgery with the absolute conviction that the bombardment represented a divine test. The Omniscia was demanding that all human life on Xerion Prime be perfected through mechanical enhancement, transforming the entire population into a unified servitor collective that would serve the machine god's will. The crude conversions and systematic elimination of resistance were not desperate measures, they were sacred obligations mandated by his corrupted understanding of sacred doctrine. The records revealed the true scope of his madness. Koreth had classified every human survivor as inherently flawed, requiring correction through mechanical intervention. Even the tech adepts under his command were scheduled for eventual upgrading, their remaining organic components to be systematically replaced until nothing remained but pure mechanical consciousness. The reclamation protocol was designed to continue indefinitely, converting and reconverting the population until they achieved what Koreth considered perfect unity with the Omniscia. My designation appeared in the final optimization schedules, marked for complete personality erasure and conversion into a mindless labor unit. The electromagnetic damage to my behavioral conditioning had been detected and classified as a critical flaw requiring immediate correction. Koreth's damaged logic engines interpreted my returning consciousness as evidence of corruption that threatened the purity of his mechanical collective. The realization struck me with the force of a plasma blast to the chest. My gradual awakening, the phantom pains from my augmetic components, the growing awareness of the atrocities surrounding me, none of it had been accidental. Koreth had deliberately allowed certain servitors to experience partial neural recovery as part of his experimental process. He wanted to study the psychological effects of consciousness returning to converted subjects, documenting their suffering as they became aware of their mechanical nature. I was not awakening despite my conditioning, I was awakening because of it. Every moment of horror I had witnessed and participated in had been carefully orchestrated to maximize psychological trauma. The hunting expeditions, the forced observation of failed conversions, the gradual realization of my own mechanical nature, all of it served Koreth's twisted research into the boundaries between human consciousness and mechanical servitude. The data files contained detailed psychological profiles of multiple test subjects, including myself. Koreth had been monitoring my neural activity through hidden sensors embedded in my cranial implants, recording my emotional responses and cognitive development as my damaged inhibitors allowed suppressed memories to surface. My growing awareness of the atrocities around me was being measured and cataloged like any other experimental variable. The hunting party returned to the central command center as emergency klaxons began sounding throughout the complex. The remaining unconverted humans had apparently discovered Koreth's true intentions and were making their final desperate stand in the Hive's Cathedral District. The massive Gothic structure had survived the bombardment largely intact, its reinforced architecture providing the last defensible position within the ruined city. I found myself assigned to coordinate the servitor assault on the cathedral, my labor designation apparently qualifying me for tactical planning duties despite my obvious neural damage. The irony was not lost on me. I would be directing the final elimination of human resistance while experiencing the full weight of returning consciousness. Koreth wanted to observe how a partially awakened servitor would handle the psychological stress of orchestrating genocide against his own species. The cathedral complex sprawled across several city blocks, its towering spires and buttressed walls creating a fortress-like structure that could potentially hold out for days against conventional assault. The surviving humans had barricaded themselves inside with whatever weapons and supplies they could salvage from the ruins, transforming the sacred space into a desperate last stand against mechanical conversion. My tactical analysis protocols, enhanced by the electromagnetic damage that had freed portions of my cognitive capacity, identified multiple approach vectors and structural weak points. The cathedral's main entrances could be sealed and defended, but the building's age meant that maintenance tunnels and service corridors provided alternative access routes. The servitor forces under my coordination could exploit these vulnerabilities to establish multiple breach points simultaneously. The assault began at dawn, with waves of converted servitors advancing across the cathedral square under covering fire from salvaged heavy weapons. The defenders responded with disciplined volleys from lasguns and whatever military equipment they had managed to preserve, their shots sparking against augmetic armor and mechanical limbs. The sound of battle echoed through the empty streets, a cacophony of gunfire and mechanical whirring that spoke to the fundamental conflict between flesh and steel. I directed the servitor formations from a command position overlooking the square, my neural implants interfacing directly with the tactical communication network. Each converted unit responded to my commands with mechanical precision, their lobotomized minds incapable of fear or hesitation. They advanced through defensive fire with the same indifference they had once shown toward industrial hazards, treating enemy weapons as merely another occupational obstacle to overcome. The first breach came through the cathedral's crypt level, where mining servitors used industrial cutting tools to penetrate the ancient stone foundations. The defenders had not anticipated an assault from below, focusing their defensive preparations on the main entrances and obvious approach routes. The converted miners emerged into the sacred space like mechanical demons rising from the depths, their cutting tools adapted for combat use against human targets. The battle that followed was a systematic dismantling of the last organized human resistance on Xerion Prime. The servitors felt no fatigue, required no rest, and showed no mercy toward their former comrades. They advanced through the cathedral's nave and transepts with mechanical efficiency, overwhelming defensive positions through sheer persistence rather than tactical brilliance. I watched through servo skull feeds as the final pockets of resistance were eliminated one by one. The cathedral's altar became a killing ground where desperate civilians made their last stand, using improvised weapons and faith as their only defenses against converted killing machines. The ancient stained glass windows, depicting scenes of imperial triumph and divine intervention, shattered under the impact of stray weapons' fire, their colored fragments raining down on the dying and the dead. The psychological weight of coordinating this massacre began to overwhelm my damaged neural pathways entirely. The phantom pains from my augmetic components intensified until they felt like actual physical torture, my nervous system rebelling against the mechanical components that had replaced my original flesh. Every command I issued, every tactical decision I made, added to the growing collection of atrocities that my returning consciousness was forced to confront. The final revelation came as the last defenders fell and the cathedral was secured. Korath himself emerged from the shadows where he had been observing the assault, his mechanical form moving with predatory grace across the blood-soaked stones. His optical sensors focused on me with unmistakable satisfaction as he reviewed the tactical data from the assault. Through the neural interface connecting us, I felt his damaged mind probing my consciousness like a parasite exploring wounded flesh. He had been monitoring my psychological deterioration throughout the entire campaign, measuring the precise moment when returning awareness would collapse under the weight of accumulated trauma. My awakening had never been an accident or a malfunction. It had been the primary objective of his experiment from the beginning. The cruel truth became clear as my neural inhibitors finally failed completely, allowing me to experience the full emotional impact of everything I had witnessed and participated in. The electromagnetic pulse had not damaged my conditioning. It had activated hidden subroutines that Korath had installed during my original conversion decades earlier. I had been designed as a sleeper agent, programmed to awaken at the appropriate moment and serve as a test subject for his research into the psychological limits of servitor consciousness. Every moment of horror, every act of violence I had coordinated, every innocent life that had been lost, all of it had been orchestrated to study how a partially awakened servitor would respond to the gradual realization of his own mechanical nature. I was not a victim of the reclamation protocol. I was its most successful product, a conscious slave who had willingly participated in his own species' extinction while believing he was fighting against it. The weight of this final understanding shattered the last vestiges of my sanity as completely as the Tau bombardment had shattered the hive city around us. I stood in the ruins of the cathedral, surrounded by the bodies of the last free humans on Xerion Prime, finally understanding that my awakening had been nothing more than another layer of servitude. The machine had not set me free. It had simply given me the awareness to comprehend the full scope of my enslavement. In the end, as Korath's mechanical laughter echoed through the desecrated cathedral, I realized that consciousness itself had become just another tool in the Omnissiah's arsenal. The flesh was weak, but the awakened mind trapped within mechanical bondage was the ultimate expression of the machine god's dominion over humanity. I had not escaped my programming. I had simply graduated to a more sophisticated form of slavery, one that allowed me to understand exactly what I had become. The reclamation protocol was complete. Xerion Prime belonged to the machines now, and I would spend whatever remained of my existence serving as living proof that even consciousness could be converted into just another component in the Omnissiah's grand design.